This is Fixed It. I'm Nishant.
And I'm Kevin. Today, we're fixing how the tourism industry approaches sustainability with Kevney Dugan, the president and CEO of Visit Bend.
Born and raised in Michigan, Kevney grew up playing any sport he could make time for. Fly fishing was the one that offered a working opportunity out of college and took him to Livingston, Montana, San Jose, California, Jackson, Wyoming, and eventually to Bend, Oregon. Having the opportunity to be the president and CEO of Visit Bend is a dream come true for him. Rarely does one have the opportunity to take their passions and provide them on such a grand stage to such a wonderful community.
And I think I can speak for Bend, based off of the folks I've talked to, that it's also a dream come true for them to have Kevney as CEO. And it's certainly a dream for us to have him on the show. Welcome, Kevney.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kevney, we're addressing this meaty issue of the tourism industry's approach to sustainability. Can you tell us a little bit more about why the current approach isn't aligned with some of those goals?
Yeah, I think historically, you know, it may be appropriate at the time. The industry's just been very focused on economic impact, which is, of course, one element of sustainability. But what we know is there's been an increased movement to people using our recreational assets in our wild places. And I think the industry needs to come to terms with its role in driving people to those recreational assets and wild places. And how does the industry account for that responsibility? And how does that mentality baked into an organization like Visit Bend?
Well, Kevney, that's a great overview of how the problem has evolved so far due to these economic incentives. Can you talk a little bit about other barriers that might exist besides the economic ones that have made this a challenging problem to go tackle?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, the advent of things like social media and some of the other ways in which we're consuming information. You know, historically, we have really been able to control that narrative, and people picked up visitor guides and talked to people about what the experience they were looking for. And so the ability in which you can control a visitor's experience to a destination is very different today than it was 20, 30 years ago. Additionally, and sort of more on a bureaucratic level, the state laws that really mandate how an organization like Visit Bend can reinvest transient room tax dollars is also something that was set up well before the issues we're facing today. And so I think there's a couple different things we need to really wrap our head around is, one, how do we communicate to our visitors to engage with our destination in a sustainable, responsible way? And two, take a cold, hard look at how these organizations are set up and where the latitude may exist for an organization to respond to the needs of a community, not to sort of deter any immediate economic gain from a visitor, but start thinking about the long-term needs of a destination to make sure that 20, 30 years down the road, those same visitors today have a destination that they're excited to enjoy, and the recreational assets that drove them to that first visit still exist in the same viable format that they were during that first visit.
So when we're talking about things like legislation that was written maybe decades ago, the first thing that comes to mind for me is all of the water right legislation that was written oftentimes right after a deluge of rain, right? And this assumption that, oh, we're always going to get this much rain and we're always going to have so much water to provide. So I wonder, what are some of the assumptions that you think are underlying the current approach to legislation, the current transient tax? Do you think there's just this assumption that having a more economically focused approach to tourism was always going to be the best model?
Yeah, I think one of the things, again, we talk about sustainability, and we know there's a social component, an environmental or ecological component, and an economic component. And I think when legislation was written, it was really written with the industry, travel and tourism, driving that economic component, and that the transient room tax driven by tourism then went to the city to be used for community needs, largely in the economic development world. And so groups like Visit Bend were very much put in that economic development bubble of the sustainability model. And I think what we have to change is, again, this understanding that a group like Visit Bend probably has a responsibility on both the environmental and ecological elements of that chart as well as the social elements. You know, when you have a community like Ben that has grown at the rate it's grown at, the social impacts of another 20,000 visitors coming into that community also has an impact on that community. And I think that, again, when that legislation was written, it was really written for how the economic development impact needed to be looked after, and sort of forgot to think about what the social and ecological impacts are. And I would say a great example of that is when you look at Oregon state law and around transient room tax and really the definition of facilities, it talks about convention centers. It talks about facilities that are going to drive more visitor spending. What it doesn't talk about are things like trailheads or other assets that really is driving that visitation in the first place. And I think that's one area that we could look and say, okay, if we're going to invest in facilities, what does facilities really mean for a community like Ben? Is it really more convention centers, or is it things like trailheads and trail building or improved recreational assets, knowing that that one is one of the sort of calling cards for not only visitors, but also one of the primary reasons people relocate to Bend.
Kevney, we're talking right after the election, and I think folks are still thinking, well, political solutions don't exactly seem right around the corner to a lot of the biggest issues we're facing. So with that in mind, even though we've talked a lot about legislation, it seems as though Visit Bend and maybe some other similarly situated organizations are trying to address this issue on their own to the extent they can. Can you talk about Visit Bend's approach to creating new industry norms and perhaps what this Pledge for the Wild is?
Yeah, so this really, it stemmed from an experience I had. And I was out fishing and trail running and on a vacation with my family over in the Teton Valley area, Driggs Victor, and just had an amazing time. You know, and ended up getting off a trail system and driving home after this incredible week, and sort of recognized that, yes, I had spent money on a vacation rental. I had spent money in restaurants. I had spent money in all those classic economic development ways. What I didn't do was take the time to say thank you to the very recreational assets that I went and used and engaged with. And I sort of recognized that I was leaving my footprints to that community to sort out and hadn't taken the time to say, you know, is there a nonprofit locally that I could have supported as a way to say thank you for this incredible experience I had? And what triggered was, you know, we have this incredible visitor volume headed to these mountain towns. And their primary purpose of doing so is very similar to my experience of getting there to trail run, mountain bike, fish, whatever it may be. And if there's a way that we can connect the visitor experience to that community, you know, one layer deeper and encourage them to take some time to donate to a nonprofit in that community who is then out there protecting, enhancing, restoring those recreational assets, that our ability to have sort of sustainable recreational assets long-term increases. Now, it may not be sort of a legislation or something that fundamentally change this permanently. But if we can increase the number of visitors to our communities giving back to these assets, I think it's a worthy effort. And so Pledge for the Wild really started from having calls with Flagstaff, Arizona, Steamboat Springs, Colorado, Juneau, Alaska. There's about 14 or 15 communities now involved, all recognizing the same thing. That there's this incredible volume of people come to their community, and that is great. And they love the economic development. They love the health and vibrancy of their communities. But what is at risk is the impacts, the direct impacts of those natural assets. And so all that was created was this ability for a community to say, if you're going to visit us and use our recreational assets, would you please think about taking the time to donating a few dollars to this conservation organization? And each community gets to choose what organization that is. So the working term we continue to use is think global, act local. Over tourism and use of our natural assets is a global issue. But how do we bring it back to the local level where it's something each community can manage? And how do we sort of change that perception or that behavior of a visitor to that community to, again, do all the economic development pieces? but go one step deeper and make sure you're giving back to those communities you're enjoying.
And what I love about this idea of giving back to those communities, Kevin, is that you'll leave those communities with a deeper engagement, a deeper sense of connection to the place that you sought out to visit in the first place. And so thinking more about that deeper sense of engagement, we'd love to understand how our listeners, our Fixer community, might be able to get involved in helping out with this initiative from where they are. Could you talk a little bit about organizations they could donate to, ways they could spend their time, things they could do with their social media accounts that might be able to help further this Pledge for the Wild and in general the approach that we take to tourism in the natural world?
Yeah, so we, you know, again, really try to simplify this. So when you enter a community like Bend, and I'll just use us as an example because it's the one I know the best, we try to make it very simple, just a text to donate campaign. So in the case of Bend, you text wild, the number 4, Bend, wild 4 Bend, to 44321. That pulls up a page that goes to the Deschutes Trails Coalition, which is a group of people. There's about 35 stakeholder groups, everything from the Central Oregon Trail Alliance, the equestrian groups, to disabled groups working on trail systems. And they pool those resources, and then they decide how to distribute those resources into our trail system. So for an organization like Visit Bend, this is beautiful because we're not saying we like mountain biking better than we like horseback riding or something else. That group of stakeholders in our community gets to decide how to distribute those dollars in the most efficient, productive way. And that's very similar across the board. And so I think for anybody traveling to any of these communities, that's really what the ask is. And if you go to just pledgewild.com, you will end up at a place that shows you the list of communities who are part of this program. It will give you that code in that community. It will also talk about the nonprofit in that community. Even if you don't go through this program, hopefully at the very least, it triggers your mind to say, okay, I spent a lot of time on the water. Maybe I don't want to give to the Trails Coalition. Maybe I want to give to the Deschutes River Conservancy or some other organization focused on water. But at least it's sort of triggering in your mind that you should be giving back to these resources you just enjoyed. One of the things we know, especially given the recent wildfire seasons, is groups like the Forest Service, who are typically tasked with these sort of management, their budgets are being cut. And where those dollars are being found for wildfire are coming out of things like recreational budgets. So as we move forward, it is going to become more and more important that as a community and as a society, that we're taking time to give back to the resources we're using and not just expect federal agencies or others to carry that burden on their own.
Awesome, Kevney. I think this is such a tangible way that people can make sure our outdoors remain pristine for future generations. It makes me think of the mantra, leave no trace. And now maybe we should just say, leave no trace, but do leave a donation. And that simple thinking might be just easy enough for folks to actually begin to pay more attention to making giving back a part of their outdoor recreation pattern.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think back to a project here locally that, you know, the Pole Creek fire came through 8, 9, 10 years ago, and that trail had never been re-signed. And a group of volunteers from Sisters asked for $800 to go out and re-sign a trail that was 10 miles long. And I just think about how far $800 goes to giving someone a safe and amazing experience on a trail. How many people have now enjoyed that trail for a mere $800? It's sort of telling when dollars are reallocated in the right ways what we can do for future generations. And I, for one, am most certainly passionate about making sure this industry takes a look in the mirror about its impacts on its wild places and how it's giving back to them.
Well, Fixers, I think that's about as great the message we could end on as possible. Please make sure to give back when you go outside. Listen to Kevney. Nishant and I are, so you should too. Thanks again for joining, Kevney.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Kevney for joining us, and thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Be sure to let us know if you have any friends that are fixing interesting problems in your community. Tweet at us at @fix_cast and use #fixer to let us know. And be sure to spread the word and give us a 5-star rating if you're feeling generous of spirit. See you next time, Fixers.